I can't help but like Danny Valencia. Okay, we've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm not gonna give the counterpoint because I've done it already.
Yeah, I mean it's easy to look at his career track record and say, well, the platoon splits he showed last year where he hit righties for the first time ever. Maybe those regress to his career averages. And that's a fair point. We don't know what's going to happen. But as of right now, he's playing every day at third base. He's hitting cleanup for the A's, who, not a great offense, but still hitting cleanup. And you look at what he did last year. He changed his swing. He added the leg kick, which has tremendously improved his timing, especially against righties. He's had a great spring. So I think we have a big enough sample size that you can say there is some legitimacy in the narrative that changing his swing has given Valencia the ability to hit righties. And the power has always been there. You look at his average batted ball velocity, it was one of the top 20 or 30 in the league. There's a lot to like with Valencia, and he's $2. So I really am big on him, and I really think a big year is coming for Danny Valencia. I can totally see it.
Episode 84 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I am your host, Mike Gianella, and with me is George Bissell. How you doing, George?
Hey, Mike. You know, it's exciting. The season is right around the corner, and good news, Matt Harvey is okay. I don't have a pun for that. I thought I would.
You know, for people who follow me on Twitter and are used to the, you know, the puns, you probably know on the show, I in a recent chat, somebody's like, you're so serious on the podcast and you're so wacky on Twitter, which is the real you. And it's like, well, a little bit of both. Yeah, but I'm going to avoid the Harvey P jokes today. As you can hear from our witty banter, Brett Sayre, my usual co-host, is off this week. He's on vacation. So it's just going to be me and George. Just to get through the housekeeping, you can find us at baseballprospectus.com. On Twitter, I am Mike Gianella, G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. George is at George Bissell, two S's, two L's. And our email is flagsflyforever, all one word, at baseballprospectus.com. Please rate and review us at iTunes or Stitcher. And we'll be right back.
So we're going to have a really fun show tonight. This is going to be good.
Yeah, it is going to be good. So what we're doing tonight is over at Baseball Prospectus this week, we've had something that we've run for a couple of years. It's called My Model Portfolio. And what all the writers do, with the exception of me, is they put together a team. They put together a 15-team mixed league team, which is what my mixed league bids are at Baseball Prospectus. They use my bids. So basically, they can match the bids I have. And the idea, obviously, is if, you know, someone on the staff likes a player better than I do or likes a few players better than I do, they can put a team together. Something I've noticed, George, reading people's articles is that my bids must be pretty good because there's a few prices that I see the writers say they're happy about. But for the most part, a lot of people are like, man, I don't know what to do with the pitchers, or I don't know what to do here, or I don't know what to do there. And just to kind of segue, George, what we're going to do tonight, George's model portfolio will be out Friday when you're listening to this. And I'm going to put together a team off of my own bids as we go through the broadcast. So, George, how do you want to do this? Do you want to just rattle off your team or do you want to go by position?
No, I think it's probably best to do it by position. And we can talk about the process for each pick. I mean, maybe a little overall. Some of the thought process behind it. For example, with my team, I really built on a big outfield. That's where I like to get the majority of my production. And I think I can find infielders that aren't, you know, $20 or $30 players that I think can produce at you know, at least meet what I pay for them on draft day. I think the whole goal of the exercise is to exceed the bid values. That's the whole point. So it's basically putting together your perfect draft where you can maximize that upside in certain spots. So it's finding undervalued guys that you think are going to exceed their draft day price. So I think what I like to do is lock in a lot of my production in the outfield. You'll see I went very cheap on infielders and at catcher and corner and middle infield. And my outfield is pretty stacked. I only have two hitters above $20 on the whole team. Those are Mookie Betts and JD Martinez. We'll touch on that when we get to outfield. But I did not spend a ton on my offense, and I feel really good about my pitching staff. Just right off the top, punted saves completely. Because when I originally did my model portfolio, I had Roberto Osuna at $4. And then the news came out that he was going to close, and it feels like kind of cheating to keep him. You know, so I kind of reconfigured my pitching staff a little bit and went with pretty much straight starters. So that's my general process when putting together this team. Do you have any general stuff that you're going to do, Mike, with your team when we go about it today?
Well, here's the thing, and people who read me know this about me. I am a consummate planner when it comes to my auctions. So this is going to be quite the experiment for me to try to see what I do when I put a team together. Typically, you know, in mixed, whether it's a draft or an auction, it's kind of like in labor, I tend to go best team on the board or best player on the board for the first 10, 12 rounds and then go value. So this is really going to be more of an exercise of me looking at each position and trying to figure it out as we go along. So this doesn't intro doesn't go too long, and this doesn't turn into like a 2-hour podcast, George. Why don't we start? So who did you take at catcher, and just briefly for each position? We're not going to a long launch because you know you guys are all reading us, you know, out there, and you've read all the positional series, we hope, and you've been listening to us, so you know our thoughts. This is less about the player, I think, more about the process of building a team. So George, a catcher, who did you take and why?
Well, we kind of discussed it a little bit before the show, but these values are built for a 2-catcher league. So that's a factor. I don't know if Posey's worth it in a 1-catcher to shell out. I think he was at $27. So I went pretty cheap at catcher, and a guy I really like in Blake Swihart. I mean, if you look at the numbers in the second half, I mean, he really was good. He hit .297, .340 on base, 4 home runs. I just think when you look at the catcher position, you want someone who's going to play, and then someone who's not going to hurt you a whole lot. And I didn't feel like shelling out the double-digit dollars for a guy like Russell Martin or Yasmani Grandal, who I feel a little bit more confident about. But I think Swihart, there is quite a bit of upside. And at $9, I think he can easily justify that kind of price. So I went pretty cheap at catcher. And I really like Swihart the player, and I like the price too. I don't think it's excessive.
Yeah, I would agree. And there's some upside there. Now, the other thing about this model portfolio is since this isn't a keeper league and it doesn't mm-hmm. carry through, there's a little bit different philosophy here. If we were treating this, and you'll see this particularly when we get to the pitchers, if you were treating this as a league that carries through, I might want someone older and more of a veteran and to play it safer. But with an exercise like this, I kind of agree. You kind of want the upside. It's almost playing more like a standard mix or a 12 mix.
Yeah, exactly.
So my pick here, I had the same thought looking at these guys, and you know, I thought about a lot of these guys at the bottom, but I'm going to go with one of my favorites here. I'm going to go with Nick Hundley. I know there's some risk. You know, we've discussed this, that Tom Murphy could take his job, but as far as safety goes, he's in Colorado. Yes, the lineup isn't as good as it's been. But with the Rockies going absolutely nowhere this year, I don't think they're going to rush Murphy. Hundley's backup is terrible. They didn't even keep Dustin Gourneau. I'm blanking right now on who the backup is that they decided to keep at the beginning of the year. But I think Hundley is probably going to be relatively safe for average. The average should drop. He won't hit what he hit last year. But I kind of like locking in at $6 on someone who's going to hit .270 and have a little bit of pop. And like I said, he's kind of a safe choice here. And again, it's a 2-catcher, 1-catcher thing. And in a 2-catcher league, I'd go a different route here. I'd probably take somebody like Brian McCann and Jonathan Lucroy and pair him with a $1 guy. But for a 1-catcher league, this is the route I'm going
to
go.
I found Brian McCann to be pretty cheap in most auctions, I've noticed. Or he seems to go a little later in snake drafts. So I'm with you there, but catch her, yeah. I mean, you'd probably be able to get Hundley for less than this in an auction.
Yeah, it's a two catcher, one catcher, so I don't know how realistic these prices are. I did do a 12 team mixed one catcher league last night, and I think it was Sal Perez slipped to almost the very end. So yeah, it's a whole different, and it's funny because I took Lucroy in that league in the ninth or tenth round, and I was kind of kicking myself because I like Lucroy better, but the difference between Lucroy and Perez is not much.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. First base. I took Albert Pujols, who is $15. We've talked a lot about him, and I've talked about him a bunch this offseason. I mean, I wrote him as my target for the positional breakdown series at BP. I think he's rated outside the top 10 in your bid values, and in this kind of an exercise, it's really hard to have more than one or two players above $30 and still field a pretty competitive team at each spot. So I couldn't really go expensive at first and still do what I wanted to do with the outfield. So I thought Pujols was a good compromise for me. If it's an OBP league, you know what I mean? Like you could go later on and look at a guy like Carlos Santana, guys later on that have some appeal there. Mike Napoli, if you really wanted to go cheap at first. But I think in this type of a league, I think Pujols at 15 is not bad. And I kind of like him this year. I mean, he did hit 40 home runs a year ago. I mean, he's not totally washed up.
Well, yeah. I mean, even if he slips, the average might not be good. But 30 home run potential from a guy who, is at that price, I think is certainly fine. I'm going to go – I'm looking at two different ways I could go here. But – I'm going to do what some of our people did in their portfolios, and I'm going to go cheap. And I think I'm going to go with Pedro Alvarez for $5.
Wow.
Alvarez, he certainly is a risk, but in that park, he's moving from a big pitcher's park to a big hitter's park. It's not hard to envision him hitting 25 to 30 home runs. Yes, there's a very big floor there. And, that floor is Chris Carter. In an OBP league, I wouldn't even touch Alvarez. But the power is kind of too hard to pass up at that price.
First base is pretty deep, but it's not all that exciting towards the bottom. It's
just, no, but, the other route here, and this again is the difference between sitting here and my, doing this on the spot versus thinking about it. The other route here is to go with one of the stars like Goldie or Rizzo or somebody like that. And, that's an appealing way to go. But as playing this as I go along, it's kind of tough.
And also in this one, if you're trying to basically put together the best possible team, there's not a whole lot of upside there if you take Goldschmidt at 44.
Right.
Like, how much profit is there really? I mean, it's great to get $44 in production, but it's, I don't know if there's huge profit potential.
I mean, it's also the difference between a real auction and this.
Yeah.
In a real auction, you probably want to, be putting yourself in a position where you do, Brett did this in Tout Wars. He took two or three, and we were there, we saw at the beginning, mm-hmm. He took two or three stars, and then he sat back for a while, and he filled in with a number of cheap players. If anything, he probably should have taken one more star because, I think he had to bid high in his last player at the end. So, yeah, I mean, it's different, I think, when you're doing it this way versus an actual auction.
Yeah, I talked about this actually at Foley's with Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN. He was great. We talked about this for a while, but there's sort of the soft spot after the first couple of players or maybe the first round or two of an auction where you can buy a couple of players at cost or a little bit below, and that's sort of what he's talked about. That's pretty consistent that he's noticed in his experience. So I agree with that. I like to be a little more aggressive early on because I think most – owners, especially when you get outside of an expert format, they're generally pretty conservative. They want to test the waters a little bit before they dive in. So I think that's a really good strategy point to keep in mind. Maybe you've already done your draft this year, but going forward, it never hurts to have that in the back of your mind.
All right, so second base.
I went with Addison Russell, and I actually ended up with a bunch of second base. Maybe we talked a little bit about this when we did our second base preview, but I love second base this year. I love the guys at the bottom of the position. There's a bunch of names here under $10 that I think are really
solid. Very, Yeah, it's very deep. And there was a mock I did where I drafted and I locked up my DH. I drafted 3 second baseman early and I didn't even care. I was really happy about it. Yeah, Russell, you know, we get to middle and he's also shortstop eligible. I'm thinking mm-hmm. about him as well, and I'll probably take him.
I mean, the price, I mean, it's $13. I mean, that's yeah. that's
there's
nothing.
Not a lot, there's not a lot of downside at that price. He's going to no. play, even if he doesn't grow, you're going to get that back in a 15-team mixed. And, you know, I'm not as optimistic about him as some are. I don't think this is going to be his big breakout year.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But I think there'll be some improvement. And at that price, you can't go wrong. You should always go wrong. But at that price, that's solid.
I knew I wasn't going expensive, so he felt like the best mix of having some upside and staying under $15. So
yeah,
I like Russell there. I like the player, too. He's good.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to put some of my money here because, you know, it's nicest to go cheap. I know at some point I'm hoping to spend at least 180 on my offense. I'm going to go with Robbie Cano.
He's had a good spring.
He's had a really good spring. And, you know, I wrote the comments in the annual for the Mariners. And yeah, everybody knows this, but he had a GI issue last year. It wasn't properly treated. It wasn't until the second half or right before the second half was properly treated. And once that happened, he took off. No, he's not going to hit 30 or 35 home runs. You don't double what he did in the second half. But 20 to 25 with a really good batting average is well within reach for him. And at second base and at this price, I think that's big. You lose on Cano if he does what he did last year, if the power's not there at all. But I'm betting on the power coming back somewhat.
Yeah, I think his price is pretty representative of his floor. I think he easily can return this type of value, and you might be able to get a little bit of profit there too. So that's a good pick.
His floor could be a little lower, and there's you know, there's the injuries at his age. You know, certainly he's a durable guy, but at his age, you know, we saw this with the guy you picked, Pujols.
Mm.
You know, and Adam Jones, another example, he's younger, but you start to see a guy get nicked up a little bit, you know, get banged up. Those are the kind of injuries that Cano, I think, could make his floor a little bit lower. He plays like 130 games instead of 160. Mm. But yeah, he's rock solid at this price.
All right. And so
you want a few, you basically, as I said, you want a few anchors on your team. You don't want to, you can't just spec the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends where you're going to throw those into the water, so to speak. Yeah. So I waited a while. I waited till the outfield pretty much to do that. I like the cheaper options in the infield.
Yeah. Are we going to short or third next?
Let's go short. I feel like that's the way to go. And I went with Francisco Lindor. Now,
the first player you took that I'm not really a big fan of.
Yeah, I understand the case for regression with Francisco Lindor. I mean, it's been pretty well publicized. And I think the fact that so many people are actually down on him, you actually can get him for a little bit of a discount in drafts. I've noticed I've scooped them up in a bunch of places, and you really don't have to pay above what your projection is. And now, is he going to be a 300 hitter? No, but he could hit 280. I think he can hit double-digit home runs. I don't think – last year he hit 12, and that was more than – almost more than he had hit in the previous two seasons combined in the upper minors. So right. I don't think he's going to hit 15 home runs. I think he could get 10 to 12 again in a full season. And I think he approaches 20 stolen bases. And if he's going to lead off for the Indians, who are not a terrible offense, there's a lot of run-scoring potential there. What I like most about him, and this is something I did the Effectively Wild team preview series on the American League side, and I talked to Jordan Bastian of MLB.com, and what he said he liked the most about Lindor was when he first came up and he struggled, he didn't change anything. He looked at video and said, my swing's good, I'm hitting the ball hard, and then he started to have some success, and it's just doing the same thing over and over again. So I don't think anything's changed with Lindor. I think he's pretty solid, and I don't think $17 is a whole lot of risk.
No,
he could do that.
Okay.
With 20 steals, he could return this type of number.
Right, right. You know, my thing with Lindor is he's one of those hitters that because what he did last year exceeded the expectations,
mm-hmm.
particularly in the power department, I do wonder if there's going to be kind of some of that slippage. It reminds you of someone like Eric Hosmer, like obviously a talented player. And I think Lindor is overall a better, you know, player, better ceiling than Hosmer. Just an example of someone I could see kind of taking a step back. I do agree with you. I don't I don't see a big loss at this price. But, yeah. You know, I could see him. Yeah, again, keep in mind with this exercise, I think the idea here, we keep talking about, you know, the floor is here, the floor is not much lower than this. You do want to win on some of these players because we know how it works in a league, which is you're going to need to hit on at least a couple guys to, you know, be in the money or compete. So I guess that's my thing with Lindor is I think he's solid. I don't know how much better than this, at least in 2016, I think he'll be.
I generally like him better than Corey Seager, Ian Desmond, Elvis Andrews. Those okay. are all the guys who are also in the teens. I mean, Xander Bogaerts and Troy Tulowitzki at 21, I think those are they're better players, and it's clear, yeah. but you can't buy everyone. So
well, you're,
you
well,
have
you're
to compromise
paying for
at
that
some
and,
point.
Well, you're paying yeah. for that. And with Bogaerts, you know, quite honestly, as great as he is, you know, we kind of know that if the BABIP slips and if the power doesn't come, he's not going to get there. That the price for Bogaerts is yeah. based a lot on some growth, whereas the price for Lindor, you're right, based on what he did last year.
Yeah.
Even if you extrapolate the steals and don't extrapolate the power, he can get there.
Just to wrap it up, I mean, I think I feel more confident about Lindor actually getting to $20 than I do the bottom falling out on some of the other guys who are in right. this range where I could see a scenario in which they don't get close to what they cost. So I just personally like Lindor better.
Yeah. So I'm going to take here the guy you took at second. I'm going to take Addison Russell. And, you know, we talked about him already, so I don't think we need to go into greater depth. I suspect some of the reason I'm doing it is I didn't get him anywhere and I had him as a reserve pick in tout last year. And I'm a little sad about that, but he's just somebody who's getting bid up. And I don't think he's getting bid up way past price, but people are paying the freight for him.
Yeah.
My thing with Russell is I look at him as solid at this price. I don't see him as necessarily always going to break out and have the big year. But if he does, it's nice to have a couple guys, you know, like that. John Segura is someone I've gotten in a lot of deeper leagues and NL only, and that's fine. But in this format, unless you're – like I have him at nine here. Unless you're really hard up for the steals or really believe that his spring training is everything, I'd kind of stay away from him in most mixed leagues.
All right, so the hot corner. Are you going big investment here? Because you have some money to spend, my friend.
I do. I'm trying to decide if I want to put it here or if I want to wait for the outfield. I'm gonna spend some money here, but I'm gonna spend a lot of my big bucks in the outfield.
All right. Well, while you decide, I'll tell everyone my pick, and it's Kyle Seager at $19. We've talked about it. The upside for 28 home runs is there.
Yeah,
I think his
floor really like
is 25. Well, what's there not to like? I mean, he's been the same player for 4 years, and he's been a really good player. And I think unless – okay, you have Todd Frazier and Matt Carpenter, Anthony Rendon at 20, and then the next player is Nolan Arenado at 31. So I had a little wiggle room in my budget where I could go above 15 here, and I think Kyle Seager is the best combination of power, decent average. It's not going to hurt you. Not a whole lot of speed, but I've already kind of accounted for that with the rest of my guys like Lindor, Russell, and then in my outfield. So I felt like I could take a pretty solid power guy, and I went with Seager because I think the power numbers will be better than we get, you know, with a guy like Carpenter. And I don't know about Todd Frazier with the league adjustment, what that's going to be. So I like Seager.
I'm not as wary of Frazier as Brett is, but I have some of the reservations about him. And, you know, I believe the NL to AL adjustment that Brett talks about is real. So, yeah, I looked at Frazier. And, you know, as a gut exercise here, I don't want to go with another young guy, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to go with Michael Franco. and I seem to be going with the great spring guys, which I always tell people not to do. But it's not about that. It's that I look at Franco. One concern I have with this team with Alvarez, Russell, and Franco is that the average, which I kind of looked at a little bit with Hundley and Cano, might not be there. But I'll try to address that in my outfield or elsewhere. I believe that he's somebody who still should hit like 25 home runs. Good park. Lineup concerns me a little bit as far as some of the runs and the runs batted in, but I believe he's enough of a hitter that I'm going to get my value back here.
Absolutely. All right, corner infield.
Huh.
Do you want to read my bold prediction I sent in for the staff picks? That's up Is that up now or is it up tomorrow?
I can't remember. Those are up today. So if we
Did I get any comments on this? I haven't checked yet.
There were 8 comments, but I don't know if there were any specifically about you.
Well,
I don't remember, you know, to be honest, there were 12 predictions and I had to kind of rush to put them all in, so I don't remember what every single one of them was. I apologize.
I'll read it. Danny Valencia will be a borderline top 5 fantasy third baseman.
Oh boy.
They say don't drink the Kool-Aid, don't get caught up in your own narrative, but I can't help but like Danny Valencia, okay? We've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm not going to give the counterpoint because I've done it already.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to look at his career track record and say, well, the platoon splits he showed last year where he hit righties for the first time ever, maybe those regress to his career averages. And that's a fair point. We don't know what's going to happen. But as of right now, he's playing every day at third base. He's hitting cleanup for the A's, who not a great offense, but still hitting cleanup. And you look at what he did last year. He changed his swing. He added the leg kick, which has tremendously improved his timing, especially against righties. He's had a great spring. So I think we have a big enough sample size that you can say there is some legitimacy in the narrative that changing his swing has given Valencia the ability to hit righties. And the power has always been there. You look at his average batted ball velocity. It was one of the top 20 or 30 in the league. There's a lot to like with Valencia, and he's $2. So I really am big on him, and I really think a big year is coming for Danny Valencia. I can totally see it.
Okay. I have some money to play with here, and I did say I was going to put a lot in the outfield, but even if I go cheap, they'll have so much money that I'm not necessarily sure I want to do that. And I did mention the average concern. I'm going to go with Joey Votto. You know, he's going to remedy the average for sure, no matter what else he does. And, you know, I've talked about this before. Runs batted in on bad teams are sometimes overstated. Votto is a talented hitter. You know, in an OBP league, we wouldn't be having this discussion at this price. He'd be a steal. But
oh yeah,
I have enough faith in Votto returning this value. He looked healthy last year. He's an incredible hitter, as we all know. Having a somewhat rejuvenated Brandon Phelps, and no, I don't believe that Brandon Phelps is going to do what he did last year, otherwise I would have taken him. But having Phillips behind him helps a little bit in terms of some of the pitches he sees. And quite honestly, playing on a bad team and playing against some other bad teams in the National League is going to help too. You know, something that's kind of understated about all these National League teams that are bailing or tanking, whatever you want to call it, the Reds are going to play the Brewers 18 times. They're going to play the Phillies a number of times. They're going to play the Braves a number of times. Oh. And this is true for all of these other teams. So, you know, when you look at and say, oh, the Reds lineup's going to be bad, they're not going to win any games, or they're going to, you know, they're going to face superior teams. It's like, well, Joey Votto is going to get to face bad Brewers pitching and bad Phillies pitching. And obviously he won't face them all year, but that's going to have some of an impact on players like this too. So yeah, I'm going to go with Votto.
Joey Votto is a great player, and that's all you need to know. I mean, there's not a whole lot else to it.
Well,
he's going to put up numbers.
He's a great player under 30, and yeah, you know, you could go, you know, obviously, you know, if you take Rizzo here or someone like that, you get more runs batted in, you get more, you know, you get some steals, you get the RBI, but yeah, Votto you're getting for under 30, and he has a potential to come relatively close to doing what Rizzo is going to do.
I like that we both went with a corner infielder with the last name starting with V, although mine was $25 cheaper. That's
yes.
Awesome. Middle infield. I went with Logan Forsyth. I went a little cheap on these two spots. Actually, these were, because you start this exercise from scratch, I think these were the first two spots I filled in because I knew who my cheap guys I like are.
And right.
Forsyth's going to lead off for the Rays. I don't think he totally gives back all of the power. He had 17 home runs last year. I don't think he's going to quite get to that again. I mean, he could, but you're buying him because he gets on base. He's going to score plenty of runs. I just think Forsyth at $5 is a pretty good bargain, considering that I have a lot of youth already with Russell and Lindor. Having Forsyth, who can kind of play a couple of spots and maybe step in a second, if either Russell or Lindor, if something, you know, happens and they're not good, you know, that's kind of what I like about Forsyth too.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Brad Miller. at five. Double digit. You know, you mentioned Tristan. They were talking about him on the Fantasy Focus today. Just one of those players, you go back and look at his numbers, double digit steals, double digit homers, middle infield, moving another guy, moving from a bad park to, I mean, not a great park, but it's an improvement. Division kind of hurts a little bit. I'm not thrilled about that, but putting him back at his natural position, Tampa Bay has a track record with these kind of projects from other teams where
Forsythe.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, and Miller's more talented than, no offense to Forsythe, and yeah. I agree with you, by the way. A lot of people on the staff were down on Forsythe, and we kind of pushed him down our tier rankings.
He's fine.
That's the thing. He's fine. He's not going to exceed that by very much, but he's going to put up numbers, and in a deep mix, you need players like that at middle and corner. So, yeah, my guy's Miller. I'm not a big believer in Miller, but I see some growth in him, or I see some potential for him to exceed that five. And you're looking for a couple players like this with your low end pick. So yeah, I'm going with Miller.
All right, outfield. How do you want to do this here? Because I have a couple. I have two big guns I picked.
I was going to say you're probably going to have to talk while I put this together.
You have to put together five. So let me go through mine, and then hopefully you're ready. Mookie Betts. $33. JD Martinez, $26. Those are my two big buys. What I like, this is what Mike and I talked about before the show, okay? Everyone wants to get the best value, and I understand that. You want to take the best values, but at a certain point, when a guy like Mookie Betts, I think he's getting paid too much in drafts, or he's going too high in leagues this year. But I think at a certain point, you know what you're going to get from him. We have pretty much two seasons now, almost, at least one and a half of the same production from him. I think the floor is so high that, you know, even at $33, even if I think he's only a $30 player, I don't feel like that's a huge loss at all. At some point, you're going to get the guys you like that you feel the most confident in. Maybe not necessarily like, but that you feel the most confident in. Overall, in, and Betts is one of those guys for me, and I feel the same way about JD Martinez. 38 home runs last year. Have you looked at the Detroit lineup? I mean, it's stacked. Okay, he's gonna hit fifth, but we don't know whether or not Victor Martinez is gonna be 100% all year, or if he's gonna play. I mean, he's missed time in spring training with a hamstring injury, so I don't know how long Victor Martinez is gonna be around. And if JD Martinez is hitting cleanup behind Kinsler, Upton, and Miguel Cabrera, I mean, it's going to be nice. So I really love JD Martinez. I think he's one of the best values on the board this year, especially at 26. I think that's great. Billy Hamilton, we've talked a lot about the argument valuation-wise for him, where if he's not completely, utterly atrocious, I think the potential for 60 steals, at least to repeat what he did a year ago, is there. And that was a top 20 outfielder and someone who earned, I think, close to $25 in Mike's valuations. He's 17. I think he could earn $10 more than that this year. It's purely valuation based. Do I think Billy Hamilton's a good hitter?
Are you talking about Hamilton? Yeah, Hamilton has.
Yeah.
Like, has a ton of upside, that's the thing. He was my bold prediction. I said he's going to steal 80 bases, and you know, do I believe that?
That's crazy.
It's funny. I almost said 100 because 100 would have been kind of crazy. And well, you know, let's go with 80 because you know people think he's going to fall off the map. And yeah, if he's, you know, we talked about him to death, but if he's in the lineup and doing anything at all, you know, I. At one point when he was hurt, I had a moment of doubt and I was searching, you know, I was kind of searching the internet and looking for information. And the beat writers for the Reds, the two or three of them I was looking at on Twitter, they're all like, you know, the Reds look at him as a gold glove defender who has value to them even if he doesn't hit. So he's going to play unless he, you know, has an OBP like under 100. He's going to play.
Well, okay, Billy Hamilton's a terrible hitter, but he's an outstanding fantasy player because of the diminishing number of guys who actually steal bases and the volume that he's able to provide. Last year, we've talked about it. Last year was his floor, basically. I mean, the profit potential here is huge, and I'll take the shot on that all day, especially when I have Betts and Martinez already. And my fourth guy was Corey Dickerson at $14. In talking with people who cover the team down in Tampa Bay, especially Mark Topkin, I mean, the thing he talked about with Dickerson is, man, he just hits the ball hard. And he's a guy who's batting cleanup for them. He's going to DH, so the health issues are really going to be mitigated by that. I feel really confident in a bounce back from Dickerson this year. And at $14, it was between him or Sinshu Chu, and I feel better about Dickerson from an upside standpoint. And then my final guy, you know, I ran out of money at the end, and this was my last spot I was going to fill out. And I ended up with Ben Zobrist just because I don't think he's terrible. And $6 is not a lot for a guy who is going to hit near the top of the Cubs lineup. So that's fine with me.
Yeah, so let's see what I did here. So I did manage to get five. And
cool.
I finished with 193 on offense. So my goal was 200 on the pitching, or 60, 260. That's close enough. I'm not going to tweak. And honestly, 60 for pitching on the fly is kind of tough. So I went with speed at the top, but with some power, with Charlie Blackmon at 28 and Lorenzo Cain at 27. I'm a big fan of Cain this year. I believe he keeps most of the power. He's really athletic. He's shed the health or lack thereof label. He's not on the best place in the age curve, but he's not old. That lineup, as we know, is really good. That team is really good. Just a great dynamic player. I also took Charlie Blackmon. Yep. You know, we kind of know the deal with Blackmon. You know, he's going to steal a ton of bases. He could drop off a little bit, but you know, Coors is Coors. I said this about Blackmon last year, which is the, you know, when we took him in labor, you know, people looked at us like we were crazy in 2015. And I'm like, you know, Coors plays. He's going to play. There's no one to really serious to really platoon with him this year. And they're looking at him as a full timer.
Oh, yeah.
I took Shinsu Chu.
My guy. Yeah, he's going so late in drafts and in auctions. Yeah. I've gotten him for nothing. No one wants him. It's crazy.
Britt sold me on him, and you know the speed's gone. But with the speed guys I took, I'm looking at him. You know, all I need from him is 20 home runs. He's going to produce in a strong lineup. You know, and that's kind of a theme with guys like Cain and Chu. I'm trying to balance players. Well, you know, like we talked about, like Franco and Votto, who you know aren't weak teams. These guys are on strong teams. I'm sorry, Georgie, what you were going to say?
Especially if you're in like a daily format where you can platoon him. I mean, yeah. he's going to crush it against righties. I mean, and you can eliminate those left-hand matchups that really have given him trouble. If you're in a daily, he's even more valuable, I think.
Yep. I took Gerardo Parra for 11. You know,
I'm skeptical about him.
I am, but he's another one. You know, for the money he's making, you know, I know they could trade him because that contract isn't super expensive. But he's just one of those guys who could kind of put up a 15-15 even if he doesn't have a really good year park.
He's been in hitters' parks his entire career, and he hasn't put up any numbers aside from the one half last year in Milwaukee, and then he absolutely cratered in Baltimore. So I just think there's a lot of washout potential there with him.
There is.
It's just there.
It's there, which is why he's at 11 and you know not at 20.
Yeah,
the thing I'm looking at with Parra, yeah, he could earn 4 or 5 in a 15 team mix, and he could fall below this. But you know, as I kind of said with this exercise, I'm looking for a couple of guys who aren't just going to produce the number they're at or a little bit better. I'm looking for some upside.
I'm sorry to nitpick with you, Mike, on that, but I feel like
better to discuss this than to just agree.
Well, it's more indicative of the price. I think if you were to go over like 10 or 12 bucks, I think if you go to 15 or something like that, I think you're reaching then, is my overall point of par.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, I don't buy the huge upside.
Again, that's why you know, the funny thing, as I said at the beginning of the show, with all these prices, is unfortunately, these are my prices, these are my bids. So with most of these guys, I'm doing one more update on Friday. I'm seeing a couple prices I'm looking at going, yeah, these look low, which means I'm going to push them up. Or, you know, we'll get to this with the pitcher. There's one pitcher that four people on the staff took who I'm taking, and which tells me, yeah, his price is probably a buck or two low, and I should, you know, squeeze that. But
who's your last outfield?
I have two more.
Oh, you have two more. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there's a DH slot. So okay. I don't know if you were gonna you want to do your DH separately.
I can just roll through them quick. Go ahead. Roll through your offense.
Steven Piscotty at 8.
That's a good one.
He's solid. I think the power will be there. There's some slippage coming, but I believe in power with him.
You're like a 400 BABIP.
Yeah, no, the average is going to drop, but yeah. You know, with a few of these guys, you know, like Kane and Votto, you know, I tried to balance that out. And then Dexter Fowler, $6. He's going to lose some playing time in that, you know, configuration with the Cubs, which is why I have him at 6. But he'll play enough. He'll steal. He'll hit for power. He's somebody I might move up in the last update. I think he's a pretty solid pick at this price.
All right, my two utility spots. I went with Alex Rodriguez at $5. I just think for $5, I mean, there's almost no chance he doesn't return that. So my other utility guy is Javier Baez, who is okay. Not on the bid limits. So he's $1. I think people have this notion of Baez in their head that because he was so bad last year in terms of he didn't even make the team out of spring training, he missed most of the year due to injury. When he came up, he didn't look like a superstar. I think people still see the failure that he experienced, and they think, man, I don't want any part of that guy. But you have to factor in the acquisition cost, and there's huge profit potential with a guy like Baez in terms of the talent he has and his power relative to the position he plays, and the fact that Chicago is going to move him around. He's going to have so much eligibility. You can plug him in pretty much across. I mean, he's even played first base in spring training. I just think there's huge upside with him, and you don't have to pay anything for him in a draft. I just think it's a no-brainer to take a shot on a guy like that, where if it doesn't work out, it's a buck. You move on. That's it. If he's not hitting in May, you can go somewhere else. It's not going to kill your team.
No, that's completely fair, and I buy that. So I'm going to take somebody who was in the news today. You know, you mentioned Baez. I'm going to take Jose Reyes at 2. Big risk, but it looks like at this point, you know, there were some worst-case scenarios flying around of an 80-game suspension, or he might not even play. I have a suspicion people are speculating June 1st or so as kind of the over under. So if you're looking at 4 months of Jose Reyes and Coors at $2, that's a gamble I'm willing to take. I know it's a gamble, but those are stats at that price that could pay dividends. And, you know, yes, he's as far as, you know, his character, his personality, we won't discuss that because this is a fantasy baseball podcast.
I mean, it's a numbers game. And if you're looking at if he's going to be on the field and playing in that environment at that position, $2, it makes sense.
He was the sixth best. You know, there was a discussion thread with him and somebody said, you know, this was a week or two ago. You know, when all this uncertainty was swirling around and the Trevor Story hype was at its highest.
He's a superstar, Mike. You've read John Heyman, right?
Who, Trevor Story, yeah.
Future star.
Yeah, but I like Story, and, you know, we can talk about him at some point, but Reyes was the sixth best shortstop in middle infield last year, and that's a diminished Jose Reyes. We know he's not what he once was. You know, Coors plays and shortstop is just not a very good position. You know, you mentioned this elsewhere. I kind of like the idea of having someone, you know, at a utility position that I can kind of slot in if I need to, even though this is not a league that plays out.
I understand it. If you don't like Jose Reyes because of what happened, I get it. If you don't want any part of it, I get it.
Don't take him.
It's fine. Yeah, I respect that. But if you're just playing the numbers, $2, that's fine in my book there on him. Pitching. I'll go through mine while you take a moment.
Well, I frantically try to put mine together. Yeah.
No rush. So we talked about it at the top of the show in my journal philosophy, but I decided to punt saves. I had originally done this with Roberto Osuna in my lineup at $4 because I thought if he's setting up and throwing close to 70 innings of elite ratios, that's what I want. But now that he's going to close, it kind of throws a wrench into what I wanted to do, and I figured I'm just going to scrap the whole saves thing and reconfigure. So I went, and this is what I've done a lot in drafts. My general philosophy on pitching is I go after Wade Davis as my first player, and if I get him, then I try and pair him with Zach Britton, and I go from there. That's really what I've done in a bunch of leagues, and I found it's worked. I like those two guys at the prices they're going at. I found that to be a pretty successful strategy. If I don't get Davis or Britton, then I just kind of gravitated towards punting saves altogether, because that means someone's gone above what I wanted to pay on those two guys. It doesn't make sense from a value standpoint, and I just don't want to deal with the Steve Cishek's of the world when I can just play ratios and roll nine deep in a rotation. That's fine with me. I think pitching's deep enough on the starting end that that's the direction I like to go. So I went with four really big pitchers. They're all under $16, but I really like all four of these guys to anchor a rotation. Ratio wise, I think they're outstanding. And then Carrasco has the huge upside. So that's with the strikeouts especially. I went with Carlos Carrasco and Adam Wainwright at $16 each. We've talked a bunch about both of these guys. I think Carrasco with Lindor at shortstop is a pretty legitimate Cy Young candidate if everything comes together for him. I can envision that scenario happening. And at $16, that's not a huge acquisition cost. I've seen him go for a lot more in drafts, so I know this bid value I feel like is really low. And that's not a bad thing for, you know, Mike's done a really good job with these. I just think that people really like Carrasco and they're going above sticker price in a lot of cases.
No, I agree. No, I definitely agree with that. I think that, yeah, keep in mind with the bids, what these try to reflect is as much as they reflect my preferences. And if you read the articles, you know this, they reflect market realities as well. And that's with some of the Carrasco prices. My price isn't an endorsement of Carrasco so much as saying, look, you know, if you want him, this is the floor of what you're going to have to bid. And chances are good you're going to have to bid higher.
Yeah, and there's obviously monster upside with him, but I think you have to be cognizant of what the limits are that you should push it to with him. If you get into a bidding war or you're trying to trade for him in season. Adam Wainwright, we've talked about a bunch. Love the bounce back there. Cole Hamels, I feel like, is a good pitcher who no one seems to think is an ace anymore, and he's not getting drafted like one, or the money's not getting shelled out like he is, and he doesn't need to be at $13. Marcus Stroman at 11. I don't see Stroman, to me the strikeout upside isn't there, that he's never going to be a number one fantasy starter, but I think he's a solid two or three for a long time, and there's a lot of things. I mean, pinpoint control, the ground ball rate. I just think he's really, really good. And he doesn't need to strike out 220 guys to return $11. I think he can do that.
Absolutely. I think Stroman is such a talented athlete that what he may not have in punch-out ability, and you know, also judging last year's four starts in the majors isn't necessarily fair, but even if he doesn't get to be that big-time strikeout guy, he can certainly get to that kind of performance level.
I feel like we used to say that about Madison Bumgarner a lot, was, you know, he's never going to be the huge strikeout guy, but, you know, I mean, look at him. Yeah. I feel like we're reaching that point early here with Stroman where, yeah, you don't worry about the strikeouts. You just look at the ratios and really how much that mitigates the risk factor with him from a start-to-start basis. He's not going to go out there and blow up. So I think that's huge. I went then with Dellin Betances at $9 just for the ratios. He could get some saves now that Miller might be injured with the hand.
Did you get all the news on that, George? Did you see the latest?
It literally just happened like 10, 15 minutes before we were going to start the show. So I don't know exactly what the timetable is, but...
Well, he has a chip fracture now in his wrist.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't sound great.
I'm not either, and, you know, it's just one of those things that they're going to have to be as careful as possible. So, yeah, it could be... Right, we don't know the timetables we're talking about this, so by tomorrow this might all be irrelevant, but...
It's 30 games till Chapman comes back.
Yeah, at this point I'm assuming a month. So, you know, if you have Miller or if you have a draft this weekend and you're looking for quick saves, those are probably gone. And, you know, Betances, who already is valuable, is the guy for probably 7 or 8 saves.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it with Jeff Quinton on the pod I did with him, but Betances was, I think, a top 25 pitcher last year. Pitcher, not reliever. He's getting drafted as like barely a top 30 reliever now.
You know,
it's absurd.
If you listen to this, you probably listen to that podcast as well. But yeah, he struck out 131 guys, I believe, last year. you're talking about, you know, in a 15-team mix, that's like a fifth or sixth starter strikeouts with those ratios.
Like, he's more valuable than Anthony DeSclafani by a lot. You know, someone like that. So I'd rather have him instead of another back-end starter type with my $10. Jose Quintana at $6 is so low. I mean, he's only won – I don't think he's ever won more than 9 games in a season. So I think that skews people's – evaluations of him, but if you look at quality starts, he's among the leaders every year. I really like Jose Quintana, and at $6, he's great. John Lackey.
Yeah, I almost took Quintana, by the way, as one of my guys.
He was literally like the second or third name I put on my sheet, just because I love the price and I love the player. I think he's easily above that. John Lackey, at $4. We've talked a lot about him, but that's a good number. And my last two guys were Eduardo Rodriguez at $1 and R.A. Dickey at $1. Just because if you're going to play without any closers, if you're going to punt saves, you need innings. And I feel like R.A. Dickey does that. And then a little bit of upside there with Rodriguez. But he graded out really well by deserve run average last year. And he's a guy I kind of keep in my eye on. I know he's hurt now, but he's going to be back in early April, and he's not a bad starter. He could be the number two in Boston behind Price, statistically.
Is that another Matt Harvey joke? Oh, no, wait, you said number two. Yeah. So that's a good staff. I should point out that before the show, so, you know, I do my bid limits weekly, and there's been a lot of news with closers. Including today, Roberto Osuna, who I had lower than Drew Storen in my rankings, was pushed up to closer. The Will Smith injury, the Jeremy Jeffress price still reflects him as more of a setup. So George went the route of being honorable and not taking those guys. Some people in the portfolio, I shouldn't use the term honorable, I guess, but some people looked at it like, well, you know, this is almost like having an auction, having inside information, so I'll add these guys, which is fine, but... I'm going to go the same route. I'm not going to take guys like Osuna or Jeffress. I could, but I'm going to pretend that the prices are higher. And I did the same thing George did. I did it a little differently, but I did not take a closer. I did take a couple of relievers, though. So let's get right to it. So the ace of my staff is Noah Syndergaard at 18. My price for him actually reflects the belief that there's going to be some slippage with him. Just in terms of the luck, not in terms of the ability, but he's, you know, when he's on,
going,
you know,
higher than that, I feel.
Well, he is, and you know, he's the guy I alluded to earlier whose price I'm gonna have to push up a couple bucks. He's just a hell of a pitcher, you know, in the postseason stage. I think the reason he's going higher this is the postseason stage when people saw his stuff. He was one of those pitchers that if you don't see him, it's like, does he really throw that fast? And then you watch him, you're like, oh my god, like everything he throws, he just rips. You know, it's incredible.
Do you want to hear a fun story about Syndergaard? 30-second story.
No, sure.
Okay, so my dad is not a huge baseball guy. I mean, he grew up playing, used to watch it a lot. Now he'll only like watch the World Series, and so he comes up to me the next morning after Syndergaard pitched, and he goes, "Hey, have you seen that Syndergaard guy?" He goes, "Whoa. That's a pitcher," and he's maybe watched 5 games a year, and he's like, that's a dude. So it's pretty obvious how good Syndergaard is. You don't have to be a genius to know. You know what I mean? He's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and I that's a good point. I love players from a baseball perspective who you don't have to, like, you can just watch them. You know, it's true for others. Like, you know, it's like
when you see Steph Curry, you know,
right? I was going to use him as an example, and obviously Curry is a better all around, you know, athlete.
Yeah.
Curry's the Trout of basketball. So, but yeah, there's a handful of players in every sport that you can watch as a general fan. I'm like, holy crap, you know, I'm watching something special here. With Syndergaard, he's not there yet, but he could. Yeah, it's Kershaw, but you know, Syndergaard in a couple of years could get there. The thing I like with Syndergaard, that my story is last year, you know, Syndergaard and Kershaw, when they dueled for the first time, and I believe the Mets won that game, you know, and Kershaw hadn't seen him before, and Kershaw had that reaction too of like, holy crap, like, this kid's good. Mm-hmm. And Kershaw's like, yeah, that's what I'd expect from a fellow Texan. And you know, I thought that was I thought that was funny. So yeah, Syndergaard, I don't need to go into too much more of this. You know, we know what he is, we know what he can do. There's some risk the sophomore year, but I think his stuff overcomes that. Carlos Martinez at 14 is next for me. He has been throwing, you know, we know the risk with him. We know he can throw 100 innings.
Do you want to give the Brett story? Brett wishes he had gone more.
Yeah, well, in labor, we kind of, you know, Brett and I were texting today. And,
that was
and
labor,
we took, we took Michael Walker in the ninth round, and we had a choice between Walker and Martinez. And we had taken Jake Arrieta to that point. And I was like, oh, I'd rather Martinez. And Brett's like, well, you know, if we had like a second pitcher already besides Arrieta, I'd take Martinez. But I'd rather take the guy more likely to throw, you know, 170, 100 innings than Waka. Today, Brett and I were texting, and I said, I already kind of regret, you know, I wonder if we regret not taking Martinez. And Brett's like, I already regret not taking Martinez. So, you know, it's that lesson in drafts that sometimes life is short and you should just take the guy you want to take.
Yeah, get the guy you want. It always, you at least feel better about it, as long as you're not going way above and beyond what you should.
Right. You know, you don't take, like, you know, Jurickson Profar in the 12th round if you're listening, Brett. But yeah, this is the Attack Brett show because he's not here, because he won't magically hear the podcast. We're kidding. We love you, Brett. So Martinez has been hitting 100 miles an hour reportedly in camp. You know, that could just be like high readings or a hot gun. But, you know, Martinez is another pitcher. We know the ceiling with him is tremendous. We know it's just a matter of health. But I'm going to take the risk here, particularly because it's a $65 staff. Shelby Miller at 8 is I'm skipping ahead. Let me go back one. Garrett Richards at 12 is my third pitcher. Another pitcher who's looked good in the spring. Kind of has snuck down a little bit on some lists because last year his innings were low, but it wasn't necessarily arm-related. He had some other injuries, looks great in camp. A number of people, you know, like sharps on pitching are a big believer in him. I you know, great park.
Spin rate.
He's my only American League pitcher. I'm trying to do the National League staff. I'm a big believer in the league difference this year in terms of what that's going to do to ERA and WHIP. But Richards, that cancels out by pitching in Anaheim. Miller, who I mentioned, is 4th. I still really like Miller. I took him in Tout Wars. I took him in CBS NL only. At $8 in mixed, I believe he plays. 10th, I believe, in DRA among qualifiers last year. The CFIP was a little bit higher. But I watched enough of Miller last year to know that he has this stuff. It's just a matter of him kind of commanding it and using his secondary offerings to, you know, set off a fastball that has a lot of velocity but doesn't necessarily have a lot of movement.
Do you think a lot of the lack of enthusiasm about him has to do with people just being generally pessimistic about that trade, that they're kind of downgrading Miller just in the back of their minds? It's kind of like, ugh, I don't want to do that.
That could be some of it. I think that some of it could also be there was the losing streak last year. People watched enough of Miller. Miller's a funny pitcher. When you watch him, he reminds me of Andrew Kasher. He's somebody who, as great as the fastball is, when he doesn't have everything together, the ball's just really straight and hitters can really square off against him. And there was a lot of that Miller in the second half last year, and people have short memories and forget the fact that, you know, Shelby Miller, the two sides of the coin with the trade is, on the one side, it's like, oh, teams don't want him. But the other side of the coin is like, well, teams do want him. Like, look at all the Diamondbacks gave up for Shelby Miller. Yeah, they gave up too much, and it was a stupid trade. But, you know, the fact remains, Shelby Miller could be a really solid number two behind Zach Greinke. You know, I know some people like Corbin better, but Miller could be a really solid number two behind Greinke there.
Yeah. So who else you got?
I got Kenta Maeda at six. Good camp. I know there's some risk with him as well, but I'm kind of willing to take it. We've seen, you know, Hideki Kuroda, somebody who comes to mind. We've seen a lot of Japanese pitchers come over who, if they're not Yu Darvish, they're kind of underhyped. And I think he could actually be one of those pitchers. Yeah, Iwakuma's another
early
example.
Early on, people shied away from him, and that was a mistake.
I mean, people still kind of do. Like people look at Iwakuma, and they don't really pay the full freight.
There's some legit injury concern with him now.
Well, now, whatever he is. Like 2 or 3 years ago,
there wasn't, though.
Yeah, he had a sub-3 ERA, and people are like, yeah, he's not going to do it again. And that's the thing with Maeda pitching in the National League, pitching in that park, which suppresses runs and not home runs, just to remind everybody, you know. But he could exceed that price. I also took John Lackey as my sixth starter on the staff. You know, you talked about him already. I at $4. He always manages to exceed his FIP or his DRA or his other metrics. But with that defense behind him and with Hayward coming with him, I think he can do it again.
Yeah.
So my last three picks are $1 pitchers. And if you're doing the math here, I think it adds up, George.
Yeah,
I was doing as well. So I took Vincent Velasquez at $1. You don't like him?
No, I feel like you have him everywhere. you talked about him so many times.
This is the only place I really have.
Well, good, because I know you like him a lot. I get it. He strikes people out. He's fun.
He strikes people out. He's looked good in camp. Well, and the last couple starts, the Phils have been working. Here's the thing about the Phillies I'm kind of intrigued by. Nobody has really talked about their coaching. And Baseball Prospectus today, they talked a little bit. You know, the organizational rankings came out for the minor leagues, and the Phillies are fourth. And some of that is because of all the talent they've acquired. But very quietly, the coaching that they've put together for some of these pitchers, they've really done a good job in taking some, you know, admittedly good raw talent and really developing it. And what I saw with Velasquez at the end of camp, and I might move him up from this $1 to like $2 or $3 in a 15-team mix, they're working on his off-speed stuff, which is something that was never just really there for him.
Yeah.
Or it was never consistent. I just kind of saw that stuff working for him. If he can get any kind of, and what I was always thinking of Velasquez, people are like, well, you trade Giles for Velasquez, in a worst case, you're trading one closer who throws 100 for a closer who throws, you know, 95, 97, whatever. If he gets any kind of off-speed stuff working at all, at the very least, he's going to be a three.
Yeah, I could see the path to that.
And now we're at the point he's my seventh starter in a 15-team mix at $1. So, you know, you're saying I love Velasquez. I'm like, well, I need $3 $1 pitchers.
I knew it was coming.
So the other two guys, let's see if you can guess who they are. I took two off the board relievers.
Oh boy, Tony Zitch.
He's one.
I knew it. Can you give me a league?
American League. Not
off the board.
Not your American League sleeper.
Oh my dude. I'll tell everyone who it is. Liam Hendricks is my dude.
Yeah, he's not. I didn't take him.
Michael Givens.
No, that's a good choice too.
Darren O'Day. Then it's got to be.
I'll tell you. You could guess all day. So I took Zitch. Who, if our listeners don't know about Zitch, he's, you know, college pitcher, fastball, not much else going for him. And you know, if you should seek it out, actually, Jeff Sullivan over at Fangraphs wrote a great piece this winter about Zitch, that essentially chronicled what the Mariners did with him and how they got him to, you know, kind of figure stuff out. And like Hendricks, he picked up some velocity on his fastball, and now I believe it's a slider, but he has two explosive pitches, which in the bullpen is all you need. He's been lights out this spring. Everyone's talking about Benoit taking over for Cishek, who I know you hate, George. And, you know,
bad. Yeah, comical.
But it could be Zitch. And if it's Zitch closing on May 15th as opposed to Benoit, you shouldn't be surprised by that.
I'm intrigued by who this other guy is, because I can't.
It's Trevor May on the Twins.
Oh.
And, you know,
he's good in relief.
Yeah, well, he's a guy, if you look at his overall numbers last year, they're pretty boring. But, you know, once they moved to the pen, another guy like Hendricks picked up velocity. not super dominant numbers, but better as the season went on. And he's another bullpen where it's not Kevin Jepsen for me. If Glenn Perkins, who has had elbow issues, falters, I think it's May. So that's the play here for me, is hoping to get two closers, hoping to get 50 saves, even though I'm not paying for it. But if I don't, I believe I still get some strikeouts out of these two and still get some pretty nice ratios.
That's good strategy. Good thought process, though. Yeah, I like
the one drawback to the strategy with pitchers like this is, unlike Betances, the wins probably won't be there. But with seven starters and with other teams playing for saves, I'm not too worried about that.
I mean, the flip side of the coin is you can draft Carson Smith and all of a sudden he's not pitching. So
right.
It's tough because there isn't a high volume of innings to begin with. And the variability is so high. I mean, they could go poof at any second.
We saw this in Tout Wars Mix. I forget who it was. I think it was, I don't remember who bought them, but it was Wade Davis and Kenley Jansen both went in the low 20s. And then all of a sudden, the next closer went for 11 or 12. The closer market in mixed is so hard, and an auction mix is so hard to predict.
Oh, yeah.
That paying, nothing against Wade Davis or Kenley Jansen, obviously, best in the game. But paying like 20 for a guy like that in a mixed, and then seeing like two guys go for a combined 20 where you're like, gee, I could have gotten, there's more risk, but I could have gotten 60 saves and... Yeah, I get better ratios, but now I got to buy another closer. Or I got to speculate. It's just a pain.
It's not fun, but that's the challenge of fantasy baseball, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
so, Mike, we're like a couple days away. I'm so excited for the season to start. I can't wait to have real baseball to analyze.
Well,
and to talk
well,
about.
You're it's a Red Sox awesome. Fan, right?
I'm not really like a fan, I guess. Yeah, you know what it is? I'm not as much a fan anymore because I'm too close to the sun. Is what it is, when you're listening to the sports talk radio and you see the Red Sox coverage and you see people talk about them, it's like there's so much nonsense that's thrown around and you're like, I can't argue with everyone all the time and be angry. I'm just gonna let it go. So that's my those are my feelings towards the Red Sox a little bit.
Yeah, well, I bring that up because I'm a Mets fan and I have to admit, living in Philadelphia, I don't live and die by them as much, but when they emerged last year, probably a year earlier than they should have, it was certainly very exciting. And yeah, I'm psyched. I have to say that the Cubs are the team to beat in the National League, and the Nationals are still good, but it's nice to go into a season knowing that the team you're rooting for has a legitimate chance to do some damage.
What's the storyline that you're like following the most, that you're like most excited to see play out
with the Mets, or
just in general? Is there like some one thing that you're watching? Because I'll give you mine right now.
Well, give me yours first, and then I'll try to think if there's something or someone I'm interested in.
Well, I mean, it's obvious the Cubs. Like, can they win the World Series? Is like the overarching. Like, you have to watch that. But Bryce Harper, to me, I want to see what he does, because I think there's this expectation that he's going to do exactly what he did last year, and he's going to still be this great. And his growth was just so unprecedented from the standpoint that we didn't think it was all going to come together that fast as it did a year ago. I mean, look, if you look at the Pagoda projections, he exceeded his 90th percentile projection by like June. Okay, so
yeah,
he's like a once-in-a-generation talent, obviously, but I don't know if now maybe the expectations are so high that it's going to be hard for him to meet those. I really want to see what Harper does. I'm fascinated by him. It's those high-variance guys. Like, Yasiel Puig's another one for me. Like, those are the two guys that I really just can't wait to see what they do, because I feel like opinions on them are really diverse, and I'm excited to see how they play. That's honest.
See, I'm more of a team person, and there's a couple of West Coast teams, so I'm curious to see. They made a lot of changes. I'm curious to see what the Diamondbacks and the Mariners do.
Mm-hmm.
And the Diamondbacks case, they're the third best team in the NL West. Clearly the Dodgers and Giants, and you can flip the order, particularly if you're concerned about the Dodgers' injuries are better. But the Diamondbacks last year had one of the stronger offenses, And even though they get in their own way constantly, and, you know, they're going to lead off Segura, apparently, which is a big mistake. And, you know, but oh, well. There's so much talent on that team. And now they've added some pitching. You just kind of look at them. They're one of those variance teams. It's kind of like the Mets last year. The Mets last year, I thought, were an 83-win team going in. And I looked at them, I'm like, yeah, you know, the thing about the Mets, though, is they could win 78. They could win 80. I didn't think they would win 90, you know, 90, win the division and go to the World Series. The Diamondbacks are that team. Like, they're that team that they could sneak into a wild card. I don't think they will. That's not my prediction. But they're that variance team. And then over the American League, I look at the Mariners, and I'm just kind of intrigued by what they did. You know, we talked about Cano and the ceiling that he has and the ability to come back. You know, I know you're not a fan of Nelson Cruz, but, you know, from a baseball standpoint, in that lineup, he doesn't have to be the star. He's still really solid. Now, I like the Adam Lind addition. You know, we talked about Zich. Tyon Walker has some growth. They're another team that I expect them to win, you know, like 78 games or so. But if they exceed that, and if that team comes together, we know with, you know, and you might not be old enough to remember, George, but, and I'm not saying it's a knock, but I remember when that team with, you know, Big Unit and Griffey and some other players was winning. It's a great place. You know, it's a great place when things are kind of gelling. And those are the kind of things I look at. You know, the White Sox are another team, too. I think they're a year away, but they have some players like Sale and Rodon that I want to see. I always look at these things from a team perspective, because as much as I like the individual players, I love it when a city, you know, we saw this with the Cubs too, you know, when a city kind of gets into a team and the park just starts hopping. Now, I saw it here in Philly a few years ago when the Phillies emerged. It's just a great thing to see.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I can't even almost describe it.
Yeah, so
it's been such a long off season.
Yeah, so. we could talk about baseball all night, but yeah, we're almost there.
We got to wrap it up.
Yeah, next week when Brett comes back, we'll be, you know, talking about our regular features. So yeah, we're gonna take a little break here, and we'll be back to wrap things up here on Flags Fly Forever. We're back. Thank you for listening to, as George said, episode 84 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. Don't say that three times fast. You can read us at baseballprospectus.com. And next week, as I said, we're coming up on opening day. You can catch all of our regular features at Baseball Prospectus, and they'll be our usual articles like the stash list, pitching forecaster. Also, don't forget about the Bat Signal, our premium service, which you can send questions to us, your beloved fantasy experts, and we will answer them. So once again, this is Mike Gianella, and over there is George Thistle, and we will talk to you, or we will be talking to you next week. Bye-bye, guys.
Real baseball, it's happening. Get excited.